walks out and then... Oh,
man. Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the fuck'd you do that?
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
Oh, man, I seen some crazy-ass shit in my time, but
Welcome, everybody. This is Room Tone, the show that takes filmmaking's community to your ears. Ruggero, your host. We're gonna dive right into the mind of our guests. But first, guess the soundtrack. Welcome, everybody. This is Room Tone, the show that takes filmmaking's community to your ears. I'm Ruggero, your host. We are broadcasting from unceded Musqueam land here on CITR Radio 101.9 FM. For you, we talk movies because we love it. We have two guests here in the booth with us. They're going to discuss a little bit about their projects here and there, left and right, up and down, all over the place. So let me introduce to you guys Nicolas Ayerbe Barona and Aaron Fry. How are you guys doing?
Hello.
Hello there.
Yeah, the most dramatic introduction I've ever had in my life.
There you go.
Goosebumps.
I know.
Room Tone for you. Right on. Let's dive right into it, guys. Right into it. First of all, for the people out there who don't know who you are, who are you?
Okay. Well, I'm Nicolas Ayerbe Barona. I'm a filmmaker. I'm an alumni from UBC, so super excited to be here in my alma mater's radio station. So thank you so much. I'm the producer of Cadence.
And I am Arun Fryer, I'm a local filmmaker from Vancouver. Although I didn't attend UBC, I've shot a few films here. I'm a former graduate from Vancouver Film School, and I'm also the other producer of Cadence. Our director, Alex Lacheris, is unable to make it today, but a big shout out to him. He's currently up in Golden, BC.
Beautiful.
But he sends his love and his regards to everybody listening.
Yeah. Beautiful. Woo! Okay, so Cadence, you said Cadence. You guys are the producers of Cadence. What is Cadence?
Okay, well, Cadence is a psychological thriller film about a farm girl called Cadence, the eponymous character, and she's trying to have a romantic getaway with her boyfriend, who is a pop star. His name is Taylor Lake. And she's trying to have this romantic getaway. She's also trying to hide the fact that she suffers from some nightmares and dreams that are haunting her life and that are a little bit of unexplainable. Taylor brings his posse along, his friends along, for the romantic getaway, and that kind of sends her in a spiraling of trying to figure out what's going on with her nightmares, with her reality, with her identity.
So a movie that seeks the definition of identity in a way.
Pretty much, yeah. I think the movie's about identity, it's about trauma, it's about the way that we use our imagination to identify ourselves. And it's kind of hidden behind the narrative of almost being a cheese ball, cabin in the woods type of horror film. But it's not a horror film. We don't play with the gore or anything like that. We play more with your mind. We really want to mess with your mind. That was right on.
So Aaron, how did you guys get together to tell this story?
I was first brought on board actually to be the AD, assistant director. We shot 20 minutes of the film 1 year before we produced the rest of the film. And I'll be honest, when we first shot it, I did my thing and then I left and I didn't really think much of it. And then Alex and Nick showed me the very first rough cut and I called them up, I think that night, and I said, I want in. I see there's something special about this. I didn't quite understand the vision until I saw what was going on. And then we've been on this ever since. We had our world premiere last year at the Vancouver International Film Festival, where we won the Must-See BC Award for the most anticipated BC film. We played in a few film festivals internationally as well. And now we are currently looking for distribution, hoping to get it out early next year for all the masses to see.
Yeah. Right on. That sounds super, super exciting, especially because you guys started with baby steps with the short you just said. So you guys went with a proof of concept first, right?
Yeah. I mean, just to go back really quickly, I met Aaron Fryer actually in a movie set of a very failed green screen movie. I just wanted to mention that so that the director one day actually makes that movie.
Yes. Okay.
But anyway, yeah, I met him. He was an AD and I was a script supervisor. And so we were working alongside and we were both thinking like, oh my God, this movie's a disaster. Anyway, a year passes by and I meet Alex. I met Alex Lesher as the director here at UBC Film Production. Alex made all these bizarre, weird movies that always were made people really uncomfortable. And I kind of like that. Like movies that are challenging, I think mostly because my parents always guided me that way. The movie really begins because we came out of film school, and while every filmmaker who came out of film school at that point wanted to make the next short film that will lead them to success, Alex was basically like, hey, I've done BFS, Vancouver Film School, I've done UBC, I'm done with short films. I am so done with them. I want to make my first feature. And I basically just went along with it because I was just like, I'm not doing anything.
Right on. I mean, you just gotta take a bigger step.
And yeah.
The feature is probably the one bigger step that every filmmaker should take at least once in their life.
Oh, definitely. Sure, yeah.
It changes the way that people perceive you and the way that your career goes. And basically, Alex and I began with one script. It was a sci-fi movie back then. And we were really inspired by Kevin Smith. We were really inspired by Robert Rodriguez and the entire Sundance generation. All of them made a very small, no-budget feature film off of their credit cards or anything that they could do. Darren Aronofsky, Nolan, all these people who are extremely famous, they started this way. And I said to Alex, we got to start the same way. We got to make the first short, like the next no-budget feature that will lead to something a lot more interesting. The journey was quite long. We tried first with that feature film, applying to Telefilm. Yeah. Telefilm is the government organization in Canada. Runs filmmaking. We failed with that. And the character of Cadence is born out of that original sci-fi movie. He had a character called Cadence in that sci-fi movie.
Oh, clear.
And then like a month later, he comes to me and he's like, I actually have another script now. It's called Cadence.
What was the one event that took you guys on board and really made you guys say, okay, we're doing this. We're on top of the boat and we're going for it. Was there one event that flipped the cake?
I can actually remember that event clearly. I had a girl over that night, and who is now my wife. And I thought, Alex and Nick, they sent me the very first rough cut, and they said, well, take a look at it and tell me what you think. And I remember telling Anna, I said, I don't know if this is going to be any good, I'll be honest, but let's just watch this anyway. So we put it on, we press play. And we kind of turned to each other after a couple of minutes with, oh, this is actually really good. No, this is really good. even though it was a rough cut, we were used to seeing rough cuts. We knew right away there's something really special about this. I got Alex's vision sort of right away as soon as we pressed play. And like I said, immediately afterwards, I emailed them. I called them. I said, I want in as producer. How can we make this in? I want to be a part of this team. I think that there's something really, really neat about this particular film.
Right on.
I'll never forget that moment of just sort of looking at it and almost feeling kind of, I wasn't sure what to say. And I thought, I was just really excited more than anything else.
Right on. So you guys mentioned it was a long journey. How long, actually?
For me, it almost started in 2012 with that sci-fi original script. Mm-hmm. If you talk about how long Alex and I were trying to make the movie, then really it's from 2013, from the point that we made the short film that we shot it, because it took a year to see it.
Mm-hmm.
But then from the feature film being made, well, that's 2014. So now we're, 3 years. So it's been a while.
And I got to say, we did it in a way that I wouldn't really recommend. We shot 20 minutes of sort of the middle of the film.
Mm.
And so we had to call all the actors back and hope that they sort of looked the same. And they had and one of our lead actresses, she was, 13 at the time?
Yeah, she was.
And so she was growing up quite a bit. So we were a little nervous. Is this going to match at all? Can we take this 20 minutes and work the rest of the film around it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But somehow we pulled it off, and nobody's ever really said...
I've gotten comments from filmmakers. Only filmmakers can tell the difference, because they can see that the lenses are different, that it's a different cinematographer. We had 5 cinematographers. Mm-hmm. A cinematographer is a photographer for films. That's if anybody doesn't know that. It's the person that actually holds the cameras and makes images happen. The director helps a lot in that.
Yeah.
Some film school for people there. We had 5 people doing cinematography. So if you are that kind of filmmaker person that can tell apart different cameras, lenses, and everything, you can. And then the actors, they can tell because it's themselves, so they see a younger version of themselves.
Right on. But it goes back to playing with the audience a little bit, right?
Oh, for totally. Sure.
So you guys took the first step in the direction of crowdfunding, actually.
Yes.
So that process is probably the most delicate process. So many people are actually doing that. First of all, do you consider your crowdfunding successful in the first place?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
For sure.
I mean, it's what jumpstarted everything. It was really the main reason why I also wanted to make this movie, because I told Alex, this new technology, if we don't take a grab of it right now, it's going to leave us behind. We have to learn how to do this.
Yeah.
This is the way that filmmakers are doing things right now. And that's actually what brought Arun and me together again, was we made another crowdfunding campaign. And I saw it basically...
Which was a UBC film, actually.
Which was a UBC film, yes. By
called Citizen Jane,
Citizen
if
Jane,
listening.
by filmmaker Cary Green from the MFA program. And... that was practice for this, for Cadence, and we learned a lot.
Oh, tons, yeah.
Yeah.
We also learned it's probably not to do your crowdfunding campaign, or end the campaign 2 days before you go to picture. It's nice to have a bit of a break in between.
That's true. So yeah,
but I think we built up some momentum through all of that, and we raised enough money to kind of get the crew started, and it got also built up a lot of audience engagement, and we've been carrying on ever since.
Yeah,
sure. Mm-hmm. Very, very interesting right there. It seems like a path worth the time of actually all the family, because 3 years, it becomes pretty much a Cadence family in there.
Oh, yeah.
It is. It's definitely a Cadence family. And, it really started with me and Alex. We would go to this coffee shop in Carysdale all the time. We had no idea who was going to help us at all. But we knew our training from film school. So for me, it was all like, well, we got to find a cast first. We did a casting session, very small, barely anybody showed up, but everybody came out of that casting session. Everybody who is in the movie is from that one time that we casted, except for the father.
Yeah, and they're all local BC actors.
Yes,
and they're all actually exceptional in all of their roles. The character that plays the pop star is actually a local singer-songwriter named Charlie Kerr.
Yes, Charlie Kerr.
Mm-hmm. Our main villain, David Kay, sensational former...
David Kay, another UBC alumni.
Also a UBC alumni. And he used to be a bit of a child actor, and he was looking for something a little bit different. And he really gravitated towards this role. And he's exceptionally creepy.
Oh, yeah.
I'll never forget. I was the AD on Cadence, and I remember just not wanting to be around him because he was kind of a jerk, but... David Kay is not a jerk, but
in real life he's
a lovely man, but his character is just so awful, and He really brought that. He was a lot of method acting.
How do you feel Cadence actually helped the team to grow and actually, you know, find its roots in the community of filmmakers? How much do you feel Cadence actually supported your journey as a filmmaker, not only as a Cadence family, but individually speaking?
Okay, well, personally, I can tell you that, one, I'm a better producer because of it, because I made every single mistake making this movie. And then right after that, I wasn't making that many mistakes still. But, you know, this is a hard business. Every movie is different. Yeah, I just came out as a better producer. But at the same time, this feature film is what got me my master's degree. I did a master's degree in digital media at the Center for Digital Media, which is one of the schools that belongs to UBC as well. And 100% that's the reason I got in, because I had so much experience out of the gate.
For sure. Okay, we're going to take a little break right now, and we're going to join back Nicolas Ayerbe Barona and Arun Fry here at Room Tone. In case you guys didn't manage to detect the soundtrack, the guest today chose the soundtrack of Eyes Wide Shut, the movie directed by Christopher Nolan. So right now...
Stanley Kubrick.
Oh, my God. That popped out of my mind. I was thinking about something else. Sorry about that. A huge fan of Stanley Kubrick right there. song right now, Waltz Number 2 by Dmitri Shostakovich.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Room Tone, the show that takes filmmaking community to your ears. I'm Ruggero, your host. This was Dmitry Shostakovich with Waltz Number 2 from the soundtrack of Eyes Wide Shut. Let's dive back to Nicolas Herbe Barona and Arun Fry. Welcome to the show. We're just talking about Cadence, the feature film you guys produced together.
That's correct.
Right on. So I want to talk about the thematic of the project, actually, talking about identity and slowly carving it, you know, as we go ahead with our lives. Is there an event in your life, guys, that took you a little bit closer to what you consider yourself, your own identity?
Ooh. Wow, what a deep question. It brought me to my own identity. With regards to film or with regards to...
To yourself and life. Many events. I don't know. I can start with probably one of the largest events in my life was moving out of Colombia when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And that was, in many ways, the creation of a new identity altogether. And then moving to Canada was also one. And then finally, I would say joining film school changed a lot of things for me.
Yeah, I got to say, the very first day of film school, I wasn't really sure what to expect. I was a little bit older when I started film school. I was 35. And so it was a bit of a gamble. I'd never held a camera before. I didn't know what editing was. So I thought, I just want to get into film school. And I knew right away from the very first day, this is exactly what I want to be doing for the rest of my life. And I never looked back from there. And I'll never forget that first day of thinking, this is it. This is what I was meant to be doing. And it's been a hell of a ride ever since then.
Beautiful. Okay. So have you guys done any projects that previously before Cadence that solidified your passion for the craft?
Oh, sure. I mean, everything that I did in film school changed my life. I knew that I always wanted to make films. It's weird to say that, because I think I literally started from 5 years old, wanted to be a firefighter. You know, you have those like ideas that you want to be like a policeman or something like that. and then I realized I don't want to be a firefighter. And for some reason, straight away, I was like, no, you know what I like? I like TV. I like movies. And then I really like filmmaking. And I never stopped thinking about that. And I think my parents were always trying to say, no, maybe why don't you, you know, yeah, we'll support filmmaking, but like, why don't you try something else or communication, like your mom or something like that. And I was like, no, filmmaking. I made, at that point before Cadence, I had only done about 6 short films, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because there wasn't much training in filmmaking in the countries that I lived in before. So it was just me and my camera when I was a kid, doing a lot of drawing. I used to draw mm-hmm. a lot.
How about you, Arun?
Sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, I'm just wondering where you're coming from as a filmmaker.
Before this, I was I AD'd another feature called Hastings Street, another ultra-low budget Vancouver film.
Mm.
And
what
I had
about?
Sort of a... a crime caper, actually, but a criminal who's recently released from prison and kind of rediscovering his roots. It's based on an early short film by Larry Kent, who's largely considered Canada's very first independent filmmaker.
And he made his movies here at UBC.
Yeah, he's a local filmmaker, and he made a short film called Hastings Street, and the guys behind the film optioned that film, worked with Carrie and Larry Kent, and turned it into a full feature, and they brought me on to AD, and I had such a great time with that. I thought, this is great, and we don't have any money, but you know, we're having the time of our lives, and the film actually turned out to be a nice little piece.
Yeah.
And I've been having a blast ever since then.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So right now, looking back at the path, is there something you would not do?
Not do? I think I fought a few people that I shouldn't have for no specific reason.
You fought?
Yeah, well, like verbal fighting, not like fist fighting. I've never fist fought anybody. No, I just, in my way through film school... film school was so important to me that when any little squabble would happen, we had a little like dumb thing going on in a short film that I made once, and that led me to say some things that I regret. And so, if those people are listening, I'm sorry. but yeah, it kind of burned our bridges. But the truth is, a friend of mine once told me, who is also a filmmaker, She said, like, hey, you know, it's film. You know, unless you burn in bridges, you're not actually doing it right.
Okay. Do you agree, Arun?
I think it's important, actually, to make mistakes along the way. I think I've learned more from my mistakes than I have from my successes. It's easy to highlight and celebrate the successes, and that's the stuff we post on Facebook and share on Twitter. Mm. And nobody really likes to talk about all the failures that got you to that particular place in time. I know I've had my fair share of falling on my face along the way, but I think it's important to continue to pick yourself back up. And I think you will hear more no's than yeses in this industry, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But as my brothers like to say, 99 no's and one yes is still a yes.
That's
one thing you really got to hold on to. And I'm now teaching at Vancouver Film School. And one of the students even said that exact phrase yesterday. Even if you hear 99 no's, you get one yes. That one yes can make all the difference between making your film and not making your film.
Mm-hmm,
and I think you just got to be persistent and resilient, I think, is the key word.
So how far do you think film school actually helped you out and supported you as an artist?
Totally, I would say. That being said, once you are out of film school, I don't think anything's going to prepare you for the moment when you leave film school, because you really don't know what to do. I think film school is not for everybody, though. I think there's people who have a drive and a motivation that is so high in filmmaking, because filmmaking has such high personalities, that if you have that passion, you should just do a movie. But if you're somebody like me who had... I'd say I was just shyer, and I didn't talk to that many people before film school. Film school was perfect because I could mess up, do all kinds of mistakes, and learn out of that, out of the gate. It was a good camp in many ways, right?
Yep.
I'd never had, like, camp. So for me, UBC film was that.
It's almost like an arena to play around. How do you feel about film school, Arun?
I loved it. I attended Vancouver Film School, and I had an absolute blast of a year. It's one of my favorite years looking back on my life. I learned a lot. Like I said before, I'd never held a camera before. I had no idea what a boom mic was. I had to ask somebody to explain to me what a jump cut was. And I was trying to describe, you know, when they have the scene and things kind of move along. And so I went in completely new. And I was able to direct three short films there. All of them went on to various festivals. And I had an absolute wonderful time. And I'm still in contact, close contact, with a lot of those people that I went to school with. And I think that's one of the strongest elements of going to film school, is that you come out with a community of people, which is really tough starting out on your own. Because filmmaking is really, it's all about collaboration. It's all about working with your team. And unless you have a team that you're going to be collaborate, it's hard to just generate that on your own.
No,
so
totally.
That, coming out of that with a team already, with a community already that you can rely on and work with, that's easily one of the strongest elements of film school,
totally.
Beyond the technical things that you're going to learn.
Yeah. Again, if you have the drive, you can do it on your own. You can start going on sets. You can go to all the events where I met you, for example, Ruggiero. But it's never the same as when you're in film school and you're kind of just stuck together for like 8 hours with somebody.
It forces you into a community. It's almost like a little room, and then you see how things evolve. Depending on the energy also that you bring in the room, it becomes a little bit of a mirror, eh?
And it totally doesn't work for everybody. You know, there was a guy in my year who, his movie didn't get chosen, because sometimes in film school you pitch movies and they get chosen by other people.
Mm-hmm.
So you sometimes go to film school and not make a movie.
Yep.
you work on other people's movies. And this guy, he had so much drive that he said, I'm not going to stay here and not make a movie. And now he makes movies and does all kinds of things.
Awesome.
But he left film school, and it's because it wasn't for him. But I stayed all the way through, and here I am.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So going back to making the movie right after film school, we go back to Cadence and the feature-length movie that you guys produced. And right now you guys just did a screening also last summer at Van City Theater.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because after watching the movie, when I came out of the theater, it's fascinating because you get so many different points of view on the story, and that's because the story gives you the chance to have so many different points of view on it.
Oh, I've had a few people call me up the next day and say, so what was that about? Which actually, I don't mind that question. If anything, it makes me think, they're really struggling to put it all together. But you can tell that they want to know. There's something interesting about this particular film that you kind of, you can interpret it in a few different ways.
Yeah. Alex, the writer and director, he once said to me, like, oh, I just really want to make a movie that where people are in the shower, they go, oh.
Yeah. I get it now.
I get it now. And maybe they didn't get it. Maybe they go tell their friends and their friends think that's amazing.
And in case anybody who's listening, there is a bit of a twist that happens. I don't want to give anything away, but what you're seeing may not necessarily be.
Yeah, what you're seeing is totally not what it is.
Yeah.
Interesting. Sure.
That's the only tip I'll give you.
Were you afraid to piss anybody off with those little plot holes here and there, on those little twists here
I
and
think
there?
We had a lot of discussion about how to pull off the twist. Yeah. And I think at the end of the day, we just realized this is the type of film we want to make. Mm-hmm. Some people are going to like it. Some people aren't. And we didn't. Yeah. We just said, who cares? This is the film we want to make.
Weird enough, we spent a lot of the pre-production, like, not necessarily actually doing the work, but actually discussing and debating the story. Mm.
Yeah, the story was the hardest part.
That was the hardest part because, you mentioned earlier, the word plot holes, and it's like, yeah, the movie has plot holes, but I don't care about that. You know, David Lynch movies have plot holes. Star Wars.
David Lynch films have plots.
Yeah, I know exactly. And really, that's what we were trying to create. We were trying to set a mood, a tone, a feeling through the music, through the acting. We wanted to showcase the beautiful farm. That's the farm where Alex lives, by the way.
Yep.
And to show kind of a slice of life of what Alex lives on the farm, because the farms are pretty, but they're also creepy places.
Yeah. Oh, it is indeed. And the movie gets very creepy. Huh? Yes. I mean, I'm telling you, there is this specific scene, and we have actually the song from that montage here that we can play. We can give it a shot and people can get an idea also of the flow and the dynamic of the movie. And we're actually going to do that right now. Why not? Yes. We're going to do that right now. Let's do it right now. We're going to take a little break. So what you're about to hear is Duct Tape, the soundtrack of Cadence. Everybody enjoy. It's going to be a little bit of a dynamic over here, but enjoy the ride and try to imagine a little bit what could happen in a farm with this music. Wow, there was a little bit of an adrenaline shot at the end. All right.
I got to give us a huge shout out to our composer and sound designer, Mark Dolmont.
Mm-hmm.
MarkDolmont.com. He's a local composer and sound designer, one of the best guys I've ever worked with. And it's amazing how many times we screen the films. Somebody always comments, who did your music? Who did your sound? It's quite immersive, I find.
Totally.
And he did such an amazing job. And really, it's the music is almost a character of the film.
And it's crazy because we focused so much in the movie and not that much in the music. Like, we had music selections, and then Mark came along and changed everything.
Yeah, he really brought it to a whole new level. Yeah,
exactly. He got the tone of the movie straight away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. So is there something you guys were looking for specifically through this song?
We had a few references. Alex had a very particular artist
Juliana Barwick.
Juliana Barwick. And we originally reached out to her, but that didn't work. So we brought Mark the original song.
Hard to get original music.
And so Mark composed something that we thought worked out even better in the end. And it gave it a bit more of a darker, mysterious edge to it.
Yeah, filmmakers fall in love all the time with music that they put in.
Temp music.
With temporary music. And no, man, you should go with a... You should go with that composer, because that composer can bring everything to a whole new level. They can actually understand you, whereas, you know, a track that you get online, you know, maybe has a life, but it's a life for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, music, I mean, there is no... It's pretty much clear that music is a character on its own in every single movie. And you guys also play it a little bit funny, because in the movie, you guys play actually the song of the... Of the boyfriend of the main character.
That is Taylor Lake. Breakfast Time.
Breakfast Time.
Breakfast Time. Yeah.
Which is one of my favorite songs, too.
And also composed and written by Mark Dolmont and Charlie Kerr.
And Charlie Kerr sings it, and the lyrics are by Alex. Yeah, definitely. No, part of what I wanted to do, my grand vision in terms of marketing and production, involved actually trying to make a music video for the character of Cadence's boyfriend. Cadence's boyfriend is called Taylor Lake, and in the character of the world, Taylor Lake is a big pop star. And when you're making a no-budget film like us, you know, actually like getting at that level of being like a huge pop star is really hard to sell. So in my mind, I was like, we gotta at least create the song of this pop star so that people can have this sense that he's actually a pop star.
It's pretty amazing, because the timing and the way the song plays out in the movie is spot on, and it works perfectly. Yeah, it's really neat. Yeah. I was a little bit whoa. Yeah. I was blown away by that dynamic for sure.
Yeah.
Right on. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to take a little break. We're going to play some ads over here. We're going to take a little break, and then we're going to dive, and we're going to get your pitches going on. So, guys, get ready, because these guys are going to pitch their own dream projects right after the ads. This is Room Tone. Here we talk movies because we love it. I'm going to catch up with you very soon.
We all know that the word jazz means many different things to many different people. So check out The Real Deal on The Jazz Show at CITR 101.9 FM or CITR.ca for live streaming. Yours truly, Gavin Walker, is your host, and I guarantee the straight goods of 3 hours of jazz at its finest. So come on by and give your ears a musical workout, 9 p.m. Mondays. Don't miss it.
To sky-high gas prices, we can convince America that more drilling is the answer. High gas prices? Drill more. Prices still high? Try drilling in a wildlife refuge or off a nice beach.
Our traditional energy resources are limited. Luckily, it's easy for students like you to conserve energy.
Woke up late for class? Buy some time in the morning by taking a shorter shower. Cut down by 1 minute every day and save enough to fund your daily caffeine fix for over a week. Plus, you save on electricity and water. Install a water-saving showerhead to save even more.
For more energy-saving tips, go to www.bchydro.com. This message brought to you by BC Hydro and CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver.
Without the help and support of our friends, we here at CITR wouldn't be able to bring you all the great music, art, cinema, and culture that you love. Thanks to the long-standing support from the Rio Theatre, we are able to keep you informed on all the great artists, films, and everything else coming to town there. For all the current information about who and what's playing at the Rio Theatre, visit their website at www.riotheatre.ca.
Thank you.
Welcome back, everybody. That was composer Gheorghe Ligeti for the soundtrack of Eyes Wide Shut, directed by Stanley Kubrick. Here we go again with Nicolas Arrive Barona and Arun Fry.
Fryer.
Woo! Give me that Fryer right there. Okay. And talking about movies, producers of independent feature-length movie Cadence. Mm-hmm. Now, I want to throw a challenge to you guys, which is the pitching process.
Yes.
So you guys are gonna have 1 minute to pitch the project, a dream project of the future, or something that you really guys want to bring to life. Are you ready for that, Cheese? Are you ready for that?
Oh, yeah. Bring it on.
All right. And the clock is starting right now. Let's give it a shot.
Okay. Well, I also work in documentary films, and I'm currently producing and co-directing a feature documentary on bee venom therapy and the treatment for Lyme disease. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Lyme disease, but it's actually quite an epidemic. The CDC recently released some stats, and they think that up to 300,000 people a year are contacting Lyme disease. And it's an incurable disease and a bit of a death sentence. Right now, the infection rate is 6 times the rate of AIDS, and it's incurable. However, through the use of bee venom, they've been finding a lot of thousands of people are finding themselves getting healed, taking actual honeybees and stinging themselves along the spine. And I'm working with a local filmmaker named Darcy Muentrath, and we are currently in development. We've got a demo all cut already, and we're really excited to push this forward because we think this is an important message to get out to the world and help people ideally fight this terrible disease. So that's a film that I'm currently working on called Venom of Life.
Venom of Life from Aaron Fryer. Right on, man. Right on. Sounds super interesting. Keep that title in mind for sure out there. Nicolas, you want to give it a shot? You want to give it a shot with that pitch as well?
I'm as ready as I'll ever be, really. Going. I don't have a choice. but basically, tying it up with the Bee movie over there, the Venom of Life movie, Alex Lachers and I once upon a time wrote a script called Bee, just the letter B. And Bee is a film that stars Rosemary, a small little girl who lives in a farm with her father and her brother, Roman. And she wants to grow up and become a journalist. And she discovers a beehive in the back of the property. She starts reporting on this beehive as a game because she's very small. In the meantime, her dad and her brother are dealing with poachers in the back of the property. But unbeknownst to her, both the poachers and the beehive are connected to an alien cocoon thing that is growing in the back. So it's I would call an alien and Stranger Things meets Cadence.
Right on, and that's it for the club. Wow, so you guys got those farms going on all over the place.
Totally.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
That's the bird.
And those bees as well. Okay, yeah. Not bad at all. I didn't see that coming at all. Super interesting. Nice. Okay, so who's familiar with the show? They know about the Proust questionnaire that is going to take place right now. Oof. So Proust is a French novelist, adjective-driven narration over here. Yeah. I would say he wrote 35 questions because he believed that he could define someone's true identity through those 35 questions. So right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to pick 5 randomly right now, okay. And then we're just going to go for it. And
for sure.
We're just going to get to know each other a little bit better, okay?
I was just saying, Proust is the kind of guy that people bring up when they want to be really intellectual. I've read Proust and Foucault. And
right on. Okay, are you ready? I'm gonna ask you this because it's part of the theme in a way. But for who you are, what is the trait that you most deplore in yourself?
Oof. Arun.
Oh, gosh. I tend to sweat a lot. It really bugs me. I get really nervous, and then I get a little sweaty, and it really bothers me. I've struggled with that my whole life.
I'm actually going to go with that as well, but not sweating specifically. I think anxiety. I get really anxious, and that has stopped me from doing a lot of things in life that I should be doing.
How come, where do you feel that anxiety is coming from? Where, if you are comfortable talking about it?
I have no idea. I should totally see a therapist or something about it. I don't know. It's always been with me, and then it's just something that through time and history I've been able to control. When I was a kid, I think just anxiety was always part of me, social anxiety and anxiety of doing things. My parents always thought it was motivation, but now I look at it now and I realize, no, it's just always I had these like butterfly feelings in my stomach that was annoying.
Well, that's much deeper than stinky armpits.
Well, you know, when you go low, I go high.
Right on, 100 points for that answer right there. Not bad.
But well, that feeling over there is something that everybody can relate to, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes it might not even be anxiety in itself, just even excitement for something, you know? And
yeah. And
it's something that is so common out there because right now the ability to socialize out there is kind of disappearing a little bit because everything is getting through that screen, you know? And the beauty is that, you know, we come here and we come all together as a family here in Vancouver, filmmakers, artists. I'm talking about any type of visual storyteller or artist in himself. We just come together and communicate. And it mm-hmm. goes back to communication constantly. Yep. And communication with the outside, but also with the inside. And so I'm going to ask you, related to the question before, what is your greatest fear?
Actually, believe it or not, my greatest fear used to be bees.
Oh,
when
wow.
I was about 5 years old, I accidentally stepped on a beehive and I got around 300 bee stings. And luckily, my mom was nearby. She picked me up and threw me into a public pool and was able to almost save my life. And so I struggled with bees for the longest time. And earlier this summer, we were shooting out at some bees hives for this documentary, and there's bees all around me. And it took everything that I had just to sort of remain calm and not freak out. So bees have always been a bit of a nemesis of mine. That and snakes, after watching Indiana Jones as a small child.
Mm.
Nice. What's my greatest fear?
Is yeah. Question?
Good question. I'm going to go with public speaking.
Mm.
Yeah, I think I always just had a problem talking out loud. Probably because in my family and in Colombia, everybody's so loud and I just wasn't.
Mm.
That's what I think. Yeah. But now I'm actually pretty good at it. Like after my master's degree and film and everything in general, I've just become much more, and this is something of the last 2 years.
That's pretty amazing. Yeah. I mean, you're on a radio show and a high five, man.
Give yeah,
high
thank
five
you.
In the booth, man. I mean, that's really amazing right there, overcoming the fears.
Absolutely.
Nice. That's part of the game, eh?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think as a filmmaker, you really got to get used to being able to
totally.
Pitch your film, sell yourself.
Because
a lot of the time, investors, they'll get behind you, but only if they believe in you. So they want to see that passion. They want to see that energy.
Yeah.
It really forces you to come out of your shell in a lot of the ways.
Yeah,
for
absolutely.
Sure. So talking about pitching, actually, we have a question right here from Bruce. He's asking, which words or phrases do you most overuse?
I tend to use the word amazing quite a bit. I find a lot
right,
of things
right.
really
you
amazing.
You are amazing. You are
well,
amazing.
Well, I mean, we're all amazing in our own word, in our own way. But I find I use the word amazing way too much. I get really excited. I get quite passionate about a lot of things.
That's great.
Just hearing myself, even in this booth, I think I use the word totally all the time.
Interesting. Right on. Okay,
yeah.
Okay. Let's get to the fourth question of the Proust questionnaire. What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery?
Whoa.
In my own life or just in general?
No, in general. In general.
Oh, wow.
That
lowest
is pretty deep,
depth
eh?
of misery.
Wait, say it again. Say it again.
What do you regard as the lowest depth of misery?
Misery. I don't know how to put it, but not being able to move forwards, I guess.
Mm, being stagnant in
being
a way.
Being stuck, yeah. Mm. I think if you're stuck, that's the worst. It in doesn't matter what, mentally, financially, or whatever. Whenever you're in a limbo, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel.
This may be a little shallow, but failed hard drives. I've lost some valuable footage along the way, and
yes,
I felt absolutely... I've cried a couple times over a hard drive that fell off a table, and it was quite miserable, actually. The thing is, it's not so much that you're losing the footage, but it's all the people that have worked on the film.
Yeah.
And so you take that, all of their energy that they poured hours and hours into making this, and then they leave it to your responsibility, and then you screw it up. Something happens, the hard drive breaks, and then trying to recreate it all over again is...
And it's up to you to explain to them.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
If person by person.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, there is a little story, actually, that I live myself about hard drives, but it's been a little bit crazy because I got my backpack stolen. And inside I had a bunch of stuff, but inside I also had the hard drive with lots of projects and there are lots of interesting juicy stuff. from all sorts of files and talking about DaVinci Resolve files. But what's happening, basically, I found my backpack there later in Hastings, so I found back, wow. But the hard drive was not inside.
Yeah.
And what happened is, it was last year before I would go back to Italy. 3 days before I taken my plane, I went to Hastings to just, wrap everything up. And they were selling the hard drive in the market there.
No way.
Yeah.
Wow.
They
you
were
found
selling
the
it there.
The hard drive.
The hard drive. Oh, and wow. The files were already in there.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty crazy.
That's a crazy story.
Like, the magic of life will take you on some journeys if you let life take you on those journeys, of course. You got to be open up to that. It's pretty interesting. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Maybe you could take a look at my hard drives. You seem to have a magical touch.
Go to these Hastings.
Okay, fifth question. Fifth question of the Proust questionnaire. What is your greatest regret?
Wow.
How long do we have?
Let's just go for it.
Arun's got pretty better ones. He's lived longer.
my greatest regret, probably not starting out in film earlier in life. I wish I had started out. One of my early collaborators in film school was a kid named Jackson Harper, and he started out in film school a week after he graduated high school. And I just remember looking and I'm thinking, I wish I was you. Instead, I'm twice as old as you. So I do wish I had started out in life, because now I feel like I'm rushing now to catch up in time. But that's a bit of a regret of mine, that I just hadn't discovered it earlier in life.
Mm-hmm. Nicholas?
I think to a certain extent I can say the same about being a kid and not wanting to make movies and not knowing how to make them. But I also think that my experiences have led me where I am. So it's kind of hard for me to say, regret. If I regret anything, was ever what I said previously, just like fighting with somebody over something that was stupid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I just remembered one more. A few years ago, a friend of mine said, if you have any extra money, if you want to invest in something, I know this really great thing to buy. It's called Bitcoin. And I think it was around 15 cents a Bitcoin.
Boy.
And I thought, what is the digital currency? 15 cents, forget it. He's like, come on, a couple hundred bucks. Forget it. And now, what is it, like 6,000, 7,000?
Wow.
No idea. You make a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's the ability to foresee. That's one of the greatest gifts, actually. Mm-hmm. So we're wrapping up the episode here at Roomtone. I want to ask you, how can people reach you?
We have a lot of places. The main home for everything Cadence is facebook.com/cadencethefilm. Mm-hmm. The main website is cadencethefilm.com. Everything literally is Cadence the Film. I'm at Nicholas the Movie on Twitter, probably on Facebook. You can look up Nicholas Ayerbe on Facebook. My personal email is Nicholas@cadencethefilm.com.
You can reach me. Type in Aaron is Arun, Aaron, Isarun. You'll find me. I'm everywhere.
Awesome.
There's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, blah, blah, blah.
Just to wrap it up, we're going to put all those links in the description of the podcast so that people can reach you. Real quick, an advice for the filmmakers out there.
Do it. Get out there, grab a camera, just start making it. That's one nice thing about living in today's age. Everything's cheaper, easier to do. You don't need much. You can make movies on your iPhone now. So if there's one piece of advice, just start making movies.
Nicholas?
Yeah, set yourself goals. I'd say if you want to be a DOP, tell yourself, okay, I'm going to stop working as a barista for 2 months, and I'm going to DOP for those 2 months and see where that takes me, because I bet you after those 2 months you'll be a DOP for the rest of your life.
Awesome. Yeah. Sounds great. Okay, this was Roomtone, the show that takes filmmaking's community to your ears. Ruggero, your host. We talk movies because we love it over here. It's all about love. Okay, if you guys want to dive into our booth over here at UBC, just send me an email at listentoroomtone@gmail.com. We had Nicholas Ayerbe Barona here and Arun Fryer. Until next Wednesday, 2 o'clock, we go live every Wednesday here from Vancouver. Now I'm going to leave you to a little bit of a song from a dear friend. His name is Amadeus. I don't know if you guys know about him, but yeah, it's coming from the soundtrack of Eyes Wide Shut. Yeah, enjoy. This is Requiem.
Ciao,
Rex.
Everybody.
Enjoy.
Thank you.
The world is a better place because of Kim Kardashian's empire,
Cheetos,
fleece material,
and Discorder.
It's a local independent music magazine from CITR.
Which means that we can print whatever we heckin' want.
Album and live show reviews, interviews with artists, and sweet illustrations grace our pages.
And even you, listener, can contribute.
Just visit CITR.ca/discorder/contribute.
You can grab it around town or read it at discorder.ca.
Forever local and forever free.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Sometimes it feels like the only thing
you can count on in life is the fact that Mint Records will always have a Christmas party and always have it ridiculously early. This year, join Woolworm, Needles and Pins, Jay Arner, Supermoon, Kellerisa, and Dumb at the Astoria on December 2nd for music, presents, and Christmas fun.
Top with this.
Handy suckers out to dry like a clothesline. Lex on the cosine. Give life to my devices. Got that good shit. Seven herbs and spices.
Slice it, beat it up once in seconds. I'ma let it. We don't care if this pops checking. You are not the father. Trying new shit, not concerned about a dollar. Shows come and go, still the flow spinning chopper.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
That last one took me by surprise. Thank you, Peter Mansbridge, CBC alumni veteran, for ringing us on top of this hour. This is CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting live from Vancouver, UBC, Point Grey, which is located on top of unceded and traditional ancestral Musqueam territory.